What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, my colleague and co-host. We turn to the Chinese economy, non-transparent, but troubled. And we welcome Anne Stevenson Yang, our guide on these matters. She is the author of the new book, Wild Ride, A Short History of the Opening and Closing of the Chinese Economy. We're into the closing bit, and there's a new headline: China sees more stations shut down as high-speed rail debt crisis deepens. And when I read this in preparation for talking with you, for some reason, because I read too much, Dorian Gray came to mind. And here's my explanation. China has this face to the world that looks young and vibrant and capable and extremely a finance bro. That's the face to the world. We've got money. We can build. And here back home, the stations that they boasted about when Jerry Brown was there are falling apart, shutting down, are useless, abandoned. The weeds are growing between the rails. That's why I think Dorian Gray. Does China have another way of living this present crisis other than putting more and more makeup on the face to the world? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. That's a great analogy because the Chinese government, all governments to a certain extent, but especially the Chinese government, is more interested in optics to the domestic Chinese people and to the outside world than it is in reality, and is very determined to keep reality under wraps. So it's similar to the portrait in the closet that you never see. So Dorian Gray keeps on looking great until the moment when you see the portrait and it's actually a monster. I think that they have a poor grasp of international information flow. And so this publication that reported on the closing of high-speed train stations, for example, is from Nepal. I think that Chinese leaders don't really understand how much information travels overseas.
Gordon, I have a question for Anne.
And the rail system in China has about $900 billion in debt. It was $890 billion a year and a half ago, probably more now. Do you think that high speed rail is going to have to be cut back, or will they just put more money into it in the hopes that somehow it will work?
I think this is a great example of the waste in the Chinese government. I mean, the rail system across the country could have been improved instead, but they chose to have this, you know, super shiny high speed rail that loses money and that is really unnecessary for people. I mean, I'll give you one little piece of it is that they spend, I think, 90 billion renminbi to raise the speed on the Tianjin rail from Beijing to Tianjin by 100 kilometers per hour. But the problem is that the speed up and slow down cycles on a rail that short, because it's only like 150 kilometers, I think, means that you only get like 5 seconds of time to speed up to 300 kilometers per hour. That's the kind of thing that they spent money on, and it's actually not productive in the Chinese economy. Will they do more of it? I think they're kind of running out of money.
And the trip that Xi Jinping took recently to Paris, and also two other countries of lesser concern than the big economy of Europe, the Paris economy right after the Berlin economy. Did that change the flow of money? It had been leaving China, foreign investment. Has it stopped leaving and turned around in some fashion?
No, in fact, quite the opposite. The government has is trying to clamp down, but exporters to China have they have accounts overseas and they're refusing to repatriate their money. People are using all sorts of tactics to export their cash. I think they had the highest outflow of cash in April that they've had in about 8 years. And that's, you know, of great concern to them. It's interesting how, despite claiming that the foreign exchange reserves are over $3 trillion, the Chinese government never uses any of them.
Gordon, you have a question for him.
And that raises a couple of issues with respect to the currency. With the outflow, do you think that China can maintain the currency's current level, or will it have to relent in the near future?
I don't know, Gordon. I mean, I think that depreciation of the currency is an inevitability in China, but when it happens is impossible to say. I think it's curious that they don't draw down those supposed foreign reserves at all, but instead try to use all sorts of restraints on exporting capital. The problem for them is that if they do depreciate, then people want to get their money out even more. So it's kind of a Faustian bargain.
The real estate bubble. I check on it now and again because the story was very big for a while with the failure of big companies. And then it sort of faded away with this idea that China maybe has a market you can play because it's hit bottom. Has the real estate in any fashion found a solution to the failure of all those projects and the debt that the municipalities have? Are they seeking an answer?
They're seeking an answer, but there isn't any answer because there are big losses and the losses have to be taken by someone, whether it's individuals or banks or property developers or local governments or whoever. And the problem and the government, this is why your analogy to Dorian Gray is so apt. I think the government wants people to think that there's a plan, but cannot and probably doesn't want to actually enact a plan to bail out any of these property developers because they know that there are losses that have to be taken. They just don't want to publicize who takes the losses.
So the losses are on the books, but they keep extending them with new loans. How do they maintain that?
A couple of things. The losses are not on the books at the bank until they actually are realized in cash. So the banks have the incentive to continue to issue loans to roll over the old loans. But I think the real pain is suffered by individuals who pay mortgages on property that hasn't been delivered to them, that's still under construction. So they're clearly taking a loss, but they can't organize and claim those losses nationally.
Gordon, you have a question.
And next month, the Communist Party holds its third plenum. This is a once every 5 years meeting. It is generally focused on the economy. What do you expect from the third plenum next month?
Nothing much, Gordon. They have been making a lot of announcements, so I expect that they're trying to push up the stock market and get people a little bit excited. So, for example, they've been talking a good bit about cutting capacity, productive capacity, for example, in the solar industry. That actually, the government doesn't actually have the ability to do that because most of the solar companies are private rather than SOE. The government was very, very very successful in cutting capacity in steel because those are government-owned companies. Of course, it's still vastly overcapacitized. But anyway, that's an example. They also issued this idea that they were going to bail out property. Those are examples of how the government wants to shape the optics of the meeting but not actually do anything.
The government is going into this plenum meeting with its best makeup, a smiling, confident face to the world.
That's right. I mean, I think that's why the plenum was delayed in order to get all the public officials in line behind Xi Jinping's public pronouncements. But will anything actually be done? I don't think so.
Ann Stephenson Yang, the book is Wild Ride. Gordon Chang, I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.